Many experts believe we have to make significant strides in becoming a carbon neutral planet by 2030 if we want to reverse the impacts of climate change. This podcast exists to help everyday people reduce their carbon footprint in a practical way and become a part of the solution. It's time to rise up and join the carbon neutral movement. This is the Carbon Neutral Podcast. Welcome back to the Carbon Neutral Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about ESG investing, or environmental social governance investing, or impact investing. These are all terms that are commonly used and basically mean the same thing. We're going to be talking about what it is, why it's important, and where it is currently in 2021. And additionally, we're going to hear from a good friend of mine at the end of the episode in a bonus segment, and he's going to talk about his experience with investing into social responsible companies, because I wanted to get somebody else's perspective on the topic, because I'm really not an expert. Technically, he's not either, but he has more experience with investing, so I thought, why not? Let's add him to the episode. And then in a future episode, I'm going to be bringing on my financial advisor, who happens to be my mom, and get her perspective on where ESG investing is at. But today, I'm just going to be giving you more of a background on what it is, why it's important, and then my own personal opinions on what ESG investing looks like in 2021. But speaking of my mom, she texted me something really cool this morning that I thought I'd share with you guys. She's pretty typical to most American moms, I would say. We all sort of care about the environment, but maybe it's like we don't exactly know how we can go green and what are the different things that we can be doing. So I'm sure she's listening to this podcast since I talked to her about it, but she surprised me today. She sent me a picture of her new car, and she's been somebody that, as far as I can remember, always has liked a car that's more luxurious. She's a big fan of Lexus. And so I was surprised to find out that she got a Prius, and she's the second person in our family to have a Prius. I used to have a Hyundai Ioniq, and so I sort of started that trend. Now I don't have a car, but it was really cool to see that she went and got a Prius. And I asked her, like, what was the real reason that you got it? And a big part of that was the finances. And I think the fact that Toyota and Lexus, being from the same, you know, owner, they're basically the same parts, you know, that's kind of a nice easy transition, you could say. But even then, it's quite the difference. A Prius, she's always been somebody that likes SUVs, so not only does she like luxury vehicles and SUVs, it's just a dramatic change, and I thought it was really cool. I thought I'd share that. And it just kind of goes to show how far these cars have come, because I think most of us, when we saw Prius come out, we were not overly thrilled of that offering. But look how many there are out there. I mean, the numbers don't lie. So just really cool to see that. And I'm glad that she shared that story with me. But with that, let's go ahead and talk about this week's climate news in the first segment. So for the first story in the segment, we're going to be talking about USPS. For those of you that don't know, you're probably not from the United States. As I've mentioned before, 4 out of 10 are from the US, 6 out of 10 aren't. So I'm always going to sort of reference that. USPS is the United States Postal Service. It's the governmental entity of our Postal Service. And they were trending on Twitter, which you may have seen even if you weren't from the States, because of a new model that they're going to be coming out with. It looks completely different from what we've seen over the last, I'd say, 30 years. And in the article, it doesn't really address the unique difference to the car. I mean, you're going to have to kind of see it for yourself. The best way to describe it is it kind of looks cartoonish. That was one of the most common things that I was seeing people say it looked like. I mean, the windshield is huge, and it's just got this really weird shape to it. There's nothing like it. So, but anyways, the reason I wanted to bring it up wasn't so much for the look of it, but Clean Technica put out an article that I thought was very fascinating, and the title was Why It Makes Sense for USPS to Have Some Gas Vehicles. So let's go ahead and get into it. It says that the new vehicles come out with a very nice set of new features compared to the Grumman LLV, which is what they're going to be replacing. and they're going to be making both gas-powered and electric versions. It says that the author here, which is Jennifer Sensaba, she said, "At first glance, I was annoyed by this. Shouldn't we be replacing the whole UPS fleet with electric vehicles? What about Biden's pledge to buy federal EVs? Why are they taking a step back here?" But then she goes on to say, you know, there's a couple of practical reasons for why we wouldn't go fully electric. And I don't know how I feel. I could somewhat agree with this article. But first, she talks about the Grumman LLVs, which have been around over 30 years now. Some of them, and they were really supposed to only be here for 20 years, and some of them are still running, which is kind of insane if you think about it. And they're running off of parts that come from like the Chevrolet S10 pickup truck in the 1980s and the S Blazers. I mean, cars that have been, I mean, aren't really even around anymore. They're not being manufactured. So it's kind of crazy that they've lasted so long. Think about how often they're driven for 20, 30 years. So it was about time that they made the change. So let's talk about some of the reasons that Jennifer mentioned is a good reason, I guess, to have gas-powered USPS vehicles. I mean, if you're thinking about 20 to 30 years, she had mentioned U.S. EV infrastructure isn't ready for long routes, and that's definitely true. I mean, we haven't really pushed anything for that amount of time. I mean, this technology hasn't been out for very long. Obviously, we expect that autonomous truck driving is coming, and there's a lot of buzz around it. In fact, it came up in the last 2020 presidential election more than I've ever heard because, I listened to different people. Andrew Yang's the one that comes to mind first for me. He talked to a lot of people in Iowa. For those of you that really aren't plugged into the United States political race, Iowa is one of the first, if not the first state that gets to begin voting for the presidential candidate and sort of dwindles down who's going to be in the final running within the like Democratic or Republican Party. So Andrew Yang was one that I followed, and he mentioned talking to a lot of truck drivers that were getting displaced. And I know it seems crazy to think, and there's probably still some time, not a lot, but there's still some time. And clearly this is playing into that because we just haven't proven out a model for long routes. So interesting thought. Like I said, I don't know if I 100% agree that it's not there. I do think that, well, obviously, we're testing it with EVs, and so I guess it's just not putting all of our eggs in one basket. So second point she made is the government never builds anything fast. So she goes on to say, when the vehicles are slated to go and into use to replace these LLVs, the Postal Service is going to need to put a lot of level 2 chargers. And that is a very, very good point. So the charging capacity, I mean, if you just look at it for an everyday American, it's not easy. I mean, there's definitely a lot of charging stations, but the time it takes to charge and somewhat the inconvenience, because there's not a ton, depending on where you live, there's not a ton of charging stations. So you may have to go out of your way. Obviously, they'd have to build it all on site. And so they have to build that infrastructure up. And then I guess the last thing she mentions is just putting everything together. The USPS needs a good number of these vehicles to replace fire-prone LLVs 3 years ago. Given that they can't be delivered into the past, the need to fill them immediately will take priority over the fueled option. So USPS didn't tell the media whether anyone has injuries in the fires. So she mentioned earlier in this article about some of the problems with the LLVs, and they were catching fire. And so because they were catching fire, because they've been around for so long, it's a liability for USPS. So they needed this to sort of come together, which is kind of what she's getting at in her last point. So very interesting. I think that, you know, we're going to have hopefully proved out over the next 20 years that EVs are good for this sort of use case. And time will tell. The next story is Australian sports stars calling for more action to combat climate havoc. And this comes off of a week where, for those of you that follow sports, Zlatan Ibrahimovic called out LeBron James for speaking out about social justice issues as an athlete. This is a very common political topic, you could say. And it stirred up a lot of discussion and backlash for Zlatan. So for those of you that may not know, Zlatan Ibrahimovic plays for AC Milan in Italy. And he used to play here in the U.S. He used to play in L.A. specifically, actually, for the L.A. Galaxy. So LeBron James has a familiarity with him, not just from that. He does follow football. And, I think we can all agree that any professional athlete that's trying to use their platform for positive change like LeBron is doing, I guess everything is going to get criticized. But I think generally what he's trying to do is positive impact. And so when he's talking about social justice issues, and when athletes are bringing up climate issues for this story, I think there's no reason to criticize it. Anyways, I thought that it's all very interesting to sort of tie in together. In this specific story, Australian sports stars are basically saying that in the summer specifically, that if we don't fix what's going on, it's not going to be possible to play in the environment. So it says the growing list of high-profile athletes to call for government action on climate change includes Australian cricket vice president Pat Cummins, former Wallabies captain David Pocock, Olympic swimmer and gold medalist Bront Campbell, surfer Adrian Buchan, and AFLW player Sharni Layton. Former Socceroos captain Craig Foster told The Guardian the existential threat posed by climate change meant Australian athletes had an obligation to speak out. Sports need to decide whether we are going to raise our collective voice for an urgent climate action or just sort of sit back is kind of the alternative. So I think this article is a great step in the right direction. I think Australia has been in the news for many things relating to climate action. I mean, think about obviously the fires is something that our minds typically go to. And then we've talked about the sort of misalignment within Australian government. And then I also saw an article, which I'm not going to talk about today, about the U.S. not having sort of the necessary communication between the two parties, because I think the U.S. definitely, as usual, is trying to find a way to help, and there's just not a lot of great communication being done. So by athletes speaking out, I think this is a positive thing, and hopefully we can get some updates and change from it, and they can use these athletes as a means to sort of help promote it and get the word out. So I thought that this was good. I wanted to cover it because of the fact that I think all athletes, celebrities should use their platform for good, and I just thought this was a great example of it. Now, we're going to talk about in the next article here, we're going to follow up in the next, actually the next two stories we're going to be talking about have to do with what we were going over last week, which is the U.S. snowstorms and the power that didn't work, whether it's natural or renewable energy was just an issue. But there was an alarming stat that came out that when the grid had went down in Texas, that 3.5 million pounds of excess air pollution was put into the environment. So that's obviously horrible. It's across 200 industrial facilities, including oil refineries and petrochemical plants, due to the impacts of freezing conditions. Pollutants emitted, including benzene, carbon monoxide, hydrogen sulfide, and sulfur dioxide. And many of these are deadly. And so putting out 3.5 million pounds of these pollutants, fortunately, it's across 200 facilities. So had it been all within a few facilities, I think that's a much worse situation. But I mean, this is just something that we all should be aware of, and that's why I wanted to share it. It's just devastating to hear about. I'm not going to get into the article because it's more of an opinion piece, but I just thought I'd share that because, I mean, it is just, like I said, devastating. But more on a positive note, this next article is about the wind turbine blades and how they are actually recyclable. So the article sort of starts off talking about some of the lies that have been spread, as we sort of touched on. But it mentions that MSNBC, some of the hosts pointed out that there's a broad variety of reasons that they shared lies. Now, I talked about my reasoning for why I thought they might have lied, which is financial, mainly to do with financial, trying to be on the right side of things. So it says that first off, the fossil fuel industry funds false studies and people are willing to help spread those lies so that they will face less competition. And when these lies find fertile grounds in people's minds, they will oppose construction of new wind turbines in new places. So that's an interesting piece that I wanted to actually talk about. But amid all the lies, it says there's one truth that haters have latched onto: recyclability. So it says the tower can be melted down and the metals can be reused. The materials in the turbine housing itself, including the generator, can all be reused. However, the blades are another matter. The composites from which many of them are built are tough to recycle and often get thrown away. But the whole point of the article is that these wind turbines blades can be recycled. And so, I mean, there's many reasons why people would latch on to this story. If you want to get rid of them, let's get rid of them. If you are obviously for them, to know that they're sustainable is another side to the story. Either way, I thought that both of these articles were worth sharing. Because we have several stories that we're going to be covering, I'm just going to go ahead and skip to the next one here, which is that Victoria, Australia is banning single-use plastics by 2023 in a means to slash the amount that is going to landfill. So that's obviously very exciting. More of a headline than anything, so I thought that this was great to hear. I mean, we've just talked about some of the issues that Australia government's had. This is great. 2023 is still a bit of a ways out, but no reason to, I mean, a positive is a positive is all I'm going to say there. And it seems that there's, you know, concern about the pandemic and hitting this target potentially, but nonetheless, I think to put it out there is a start in the right direction. It says that each Victorian sends an average of 68 kilograms of plastic waste to landfill every year. I'd actually be interested to know, and I'm sure we'll talk about plastic pretty soon, I would be interested to know what the average person here in the United States, how much plastic is put into landfills. I don't think it would be I think it would be worse than that, to be honest. But anyways, good to hear that. The next one is 2150, which is, this is from TechCrunch. It's a new VC fund. 2150 is launching the first close of a £240 million, $240 million. It's a fund that will back technologies aimed largely at reducing carbon footprint for cities. So, for example, startups that inject carbon into concrete or monitor the energy of buildings. The final close is anticipated by mid-2021. The advisory board for 2150 includes the former chief sustainability officer in the Obama administration, as well as renowned urbanist and academic Richard Florida. 2150 is based around the idea that half of the world's population lives in cities, and this will increase to two-thirds by 2050. Creating a growing environmental impact that the world can ill afford given the climate crisis. Thought that this is awesome. I mean, to hear that we're funding, I mean, a VC fund basically funds other companies. So what they're going to do is back companies that are making a difference in cities. And for somebody like myself, who is big on city living and urban living, there is a big need for this. And this is so, so exciting. And kind of going over to the next article is, I mean, it's very fitting to be talking about this. This is from Clean Technica. The USA's first zero emissions delivery zone is coming to Santa Monica, California. And the reason that it's coming is because of LACI, the Los Angeles Clean Tech Incubator. If you remember in the introduction episode, I talked about my involvement with LACI. And so it just perfectly trickles into, from the last story, urban living. And this company, or this incubator alone, which invests into other startups making a difference. I mean, this is what got me into this. That's why I'm so passionate about it. And so for this specific story, it's talking about this patch of Santa Monica that is going to be considered a zero emissions delivery zone. These are not a new concept. There are, I believe the article talks about London having these sort of like zones. The difference between the, you know, our zone here in Los Angeles and that is that this is going to be more of an optional zone. But I mean, think about it. It goes from food delivery to package delivery. Basically, the whole premise is, and then also, I mean, it's showing Food Cycle LA, which is like a nonprofit organization, and it looks like it's an EV delivery van. And all that to be said, it even goes into the 2028 Olympic and Paralympic Games. The goal is to, you know, have everything sort of set up for when this is, when the Olympics come, because the Olympics are going to be coming in 2028 for the Paralympics, and then 2030 for, it's not going to just be here in the Los Angeles area, but it's going to be in the United States, Mexico, and Canada. So I just love to see this. Obviously, I have a bit of an investment into it. There's others that are involved: Nissan, IKEA, Shopify, FreeWire, Motive Power Systems, many, many others. But all that to be said, I think that this is just really exciting. I know I keep saying that over and over again, but I'm over here smiling about it, just talking about it. So the last one that I wanted to talk about, and it kind of prefaces what I'm going to be getting into right after this segment, is India. Now, I've been following my audience on my analytics, and I just saw that India joined, which is really exciting. We have, I think, 27 countries now that are listening to the podcast, which is unbelievable. I mean, we had 8 countries maybe 3 weeks ago. So this is unbelievable. I think that this podcast has the ability to really grow, not just here in the United States, all around the world, and we can really make a difference. I'm hoping that y'all find these podcasts, you know, beneficial, and you'll share these out, because word of mouth is really what's going to get this out there. I'm not looking to spend any money to promote this thing. It's all because of you guys. So I wanted to mention India, because not only was this a great article, but we just had India join this week. So for those of you that are listening to from India, thank you for joining in. India is offering $640 million in incentives to solar manufacturers. And this is really big news for India, because what often has happened based on this article is that they need to bring in imported solar technology. And so what they're trying to find is what can we build with the resources that we have here in the country, and how can we incentivize them? $640 million is unbelievable to provide to solar manufacturers. And hopefully it brings great technology that even people from all over the world can import themselves. So this is just really cool to see. It says that the solar power sector is heavily dependent on imports, with around 80 to 90% of solar modules being sourced from China. So that just gives you perspective of the numbers that they're looking at here. So anyways, I think all of these topics have been great. Unfortunately, I can't even cover all of them, but we have another 5 stories that I'm going to be going over in the weekly newsletter. We've had our first few people sign up for the newsletter, and that's going to be going out this Friday. So if you want to join to hear about these other 5 topics, go ahead and do so. The way this is going to work is I am going to share in that newsletter three to five stories that I couldn't cover on the podcast earlier in the week. So for those of you that have joined, that's why I haven't sent out a newsletter yet, but I'm very excited to show you guys some of these newsletters. So please do sign up. I don't think I actually have a segment in this episode. Actually, I do. It's in the last bit. So you'll hear that transition, I call it, to sign up for the newsletter. But you don't have to procrastinate. You can go in right now, go into the show notes, sign up for the newsletter. That way you can be informed. And now we are going to transition into the main topic of the episode. Starting this podcast has already been such a rewarding experience. I never thought I'd have the opportunity to connect with people all over the world in a way that is so meaningful and impactful. The beautiful thing about this podcast is that we're all connected to carbon neutrality no matter where the location is. We have nearly 30 countries listening in each week, and I want to make sure that you feel represented for the podcast. So I created a form where you can submit a story for an upcoming episode for this week's climate change segment. You can also share the story with me on Discord if you've already joined there. So please share a story that interests you. Perhaps it's a story that hits close to home, or it's just a topic that we haven't talked about much. I look forward to reading and sharing your stories in an upcoming episode. With that said, let's go ahead and get into the episode. All right, so let's talk about what ESG investing is and why you should care. The goal of this segment is to introduce you to ESG investing if you haven't heard of it before, and then hopefully interest you enough to help you to see why you should care about it. I'm speaking about ESG investing from an American perspective because I don't really know how other countries handle publicly traded investing, so I just wanted to throw out that disclaimer. Also, I'm not a financial advisor and I'm not here to give you financial advice. Rather, my goal is to perk your ears and help you to understand the concept of ESG investing and hopefully encourage you to look at companies that align with your values. Last thing I wanted to mention before we get started is that we should discuss the topic of ESG investing with your financial advisor. That way you build up your portfolio with your financial goals while still aligning to your personal values. And if you don't invest today or don't have a financial advisor, I am sure that this episode will be very educational for you, and I would highly recommend looking into a financial advisor. So with that said, let's go ahead and hop in to the topic. So first article that I'm going to be looking at is from Forbes. It's a Forbes advisor piece. It talks about basically ESG investing, what it is, and so let's go ahead and just get into it. So how does ESG investing work? Well, let's first define what ESG is. So it's environmental and social governance investing. And it's a strategy that you can put in to your portfolio to help companies that are striving to make the world a better place. And it relies on independent ratings that help you assess a company's behavior and policies when it comes to environmental performance, social impact, and governance issues. And at its core, ESG investing is about influencing positive changes in society by being a better investor. So ESG investing is investing in companies that score highly on environmental and societal responsibility scales as determined by third-party independent companies and research groups. So these research groups go into these companies and audit them, give them a score that you are able to see, and that helps you to determine if they are a good company to invest in based on your principles and your goals. And they give you a write-up. They show you that they're basically ESG, all the environmental, social, and governance are three different categories. And so they get different scores for each category. And I've seen this because of the conversation I had with my mom, which I'm going to be talking about in the next segment, which, as I mentioned before, she is my financial advisor. So the underlying premise is that there are certain environmental, social, and corporate governance factors that impact a business, and considering those factors gives investors a more holistic view of companies, which can help mitigate risk and identify opportunities. So later in the podcast, I mentioned we're going to be talking to my friend Eric. He invested in hydrogen, and hydrogen just so happens to be one of those identifiable opportunities he defined as a really good, investment early on before it sort of blew up. So we'll get into that. I think that's going to be fun to listen to. Now, I'm going to jump over to another article by The Motley Fool, because they talk about what the environmental topics of research include. And I think that this is really important and helpful for you to know. So things that they include, so things that they research and analyze are climate change policies, plans and disclosures, greenhouse gas emission goals and transparency into how the company is meeting those goals. And so that is exactly why you're seeing so many companies commit to these goals publicly. In fact, two of the articles that are going to be in the newsletter this week have to do with companies talking about those goals. And then carbon footprint and carbon intensity, which is pollution and emissions, water-related issues and goals such as usage, conservation, overfishing, and waste disposal, usage of renewable energy, including wind and solar, recycling and safe disposal practices, green products, technologies, and infrastructure, environmental benefits for employees such as cycling programs and environmental-based incentives, and then lastly, relationship in past history with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the other environmental regulated bodies. So regulatory bodies, I should say. So that's the environmental aspect, which is really, I guess, the main portion of ESG investing that this podcast sort of covers. But I do want to cover the social and the governance side of things. So technically speaking, if really all you cared about, which I highly doubt most of you do care about, is the E of the ESG, all you'd have to look at is the high score for E. But let's go ahead and talk about social and what they research and analyze. And of course, I do think that these are just as important as the E. So employee treatment, pay, benefits, and perks, employee engagement and staff turnover, churn, employee training and development, employee safety policies, including sexual harassment and prevention, diversity and inclusion in hiring and in awarding advancement opportunities and raises, ethical supply chain sourcing, such as conflict-free minerals and responsibly sourced food and coffee, mission or higher purpose of business, consumer friendliness, customer service responsiveness, and the history of consumer protection issues, including lawsuits, recalls, and regulatory penalties. The last one here is public stance on social justice issues as well as lobbying efforts. I have to say, just sort of reading through this list and thinking about the company that I work for today, I feel very fortunate to be working where I work at today. And they just do a great job with all of these aspects. We are a private company, but when we do go public, it's good to know that the stock that I'm building up by working at this company is going to pay off in the long run. I really do believe that. So the next here is corporate governance, G. And so some of the research and analyzed topics include executive compensation, bonuses and perks, compensation tied to metrics that are driven towards long-term business value, not just short-term EPS growth, whether executives are entitled to golden parachutes, which is huge bonuses upon exit, diversity of the board and directors and management team, board of director composition regarding independence and interlocking directorates, which can indicate conflicts of interest, proxy access, whether a company has classified boards of directors, whether chairman and CEO roles are separate, majority versus plurality voting for directors, dual or multiple class stock structures, transparency in commuting with shareholders, and history of lawsuits by shareholders, relationship and history with the U.S. Securities Exchange Commission, SEC, and other regulatory bodies. So those are the components when a company is auditing that they look at. So I'm actually going to go back into the article with Forbes because there was more there, but I just remembered that piece. I thought that that would be really helpful for you to sort of get an understanding of, okay, what exactly is each of these all about? So let's talk about how are these ESG scores calculated. ESG research firms produce a score for a wide range of companies, providing a clear and handy metric for comparing different investments. ESG scores represent ratings that research firms assign to individual companies. The rating firms tend to rely on multiple criteria to evaluate each of the individual ESG components. Scores generally follow a 100-point scale. The higher the score, the better the company performs in fulfilling different ESG criteria. And scores may vary among firms, which may employ different metrics and weighing schemes. And while the specific factors assessed vary by company, ESG rating firms commonly review things like annual reports, corporate sustainability measures, resource, employee, financial management, board structure and compensation. So some of these things that we just talked about. So why should you choose investing? Let's get into the why. Why should you choose ESG investing, of course. Ensuring that your investment choices are aligned with your priority is obviously the one reason to pursue ESG investing. And many clients are very concerned about environmental and social problems, such as climate change leading to more and more severe climate crises, gender and racial inequality, data security and privacy. There's many reasons to consider it. It's not just environmental. Obviously, you should be supporting, or not supporting because you're investing, you should be investing in companies that you agree with across the board. And that's why I think that these regulatory scores should matter to you. It mentions, but aside from helping fight climate change and social injustice, ESG investing strategy can also offer you higher returns as well. Take Just Capital, J-U-S-T Capital, J-U-S-T is capitalized, an index that tracks performance of large public companies with high ESG scores. It's included 50% of the largest cap public companies in the Russell 1000 index, but excludes companies that lack a demonstrated commitment to things like well-being of their employees, beneficial products, positive environment performance, and strong communities. So in this article, it lists the JUCLD index and the Russell index. And I don't think this is very helpful to see or to hear about. I think it's more something you have to see. I'm actually going to be showing a list of 100 companies. Let me make sure. It's actually 50 stocks from investors.com. I'm going to be posting this in the show notes. Top 50 stocks for environmental, social, and governance values. Obviously, it is opinionated, but it is the Investor Business Daily's 2020 best ESG companies. And this is sort of like a Forbes 500 list for top 50 companies. So now there's an article that I have here by NerdWallet. It's ESG Investing, A Beginner's Guide. What I wanted to say about this, and I'll talk more about this in the next segment. Generally, I would say, yes, you should do your own research, but the best thing you really can be doing is talking to your financial advisor, not trying to do this all on your own. So this article talks about ESG investing and high returns. And so that Just Capital ranks and the Russell 1000, that index that I was just mentioning, that is going to tell you the yield return on an annualized basis. And so that's why you want to be looking at it. It gives you that return rate. So now it mentions there is a difference between ESG and socially responsible investing. It says another common term for the process creating a sustainable investment portfolio is social responsible investing. While SRI and ESG both seek to build more responsible portfolios, there's a few differences between the two terms. I thought this would be interesting to include. So ESG is a system on how to measure the sustainability of an investment in those three specific categories that we mentioned, whereas social responsible investing and ethical investing, sustainable investing, impact investing, which I did mention at the top of the episode, they all sort of get blended in together, are more general terms, and often socially responsible investments are judged using a ESG-based grading system. So historically, certain forms of sustainable investing varied on how they created their portfolio. So for example, SRI used an exclusionary-only approach to filter out investments that some considered immoral, like tobacco or alcohol. ESG investing excluded the same investments, but also included companies that deemed to be creating a positive impact. So somewhat semantics there, but the larger the world of sustainable investing has grown, the more these terms have been used interchangeably. You'll see providers who offer socially responsible portfolio investing includes ESG funds as opposed to just excluding certain investments. And ones with the same title use the solely exclusionary approach. So I don't know, somewhat semantics, but you can see there is somewhat of a difference. And so I thought I'd include that in the episode. That way I sort of covered my basis for those of you that may be well versed in this topic, which if you are, by all means, I'm going to be talking about it later on the podcast. Please do send a recording in and give me your thoughts on ESG investing. If you've done it before, if you've researched it before, by no means am I an expert. I'm just the guy here that's willing to spend the time to try to learn it. I had a good conversation with my mom about how this works and where it's at. And once again, I'll be talking about that in the next segment. But I'm just kind of letting you know transparently, this is not, I can't be well versed in everything I talk about, but yeah, just for full transparency. So it sort of gets into the ESG investing, how to get started, choosing to DIY, get some help. Once again, highly recommend getting help. If you've never invested before, it wouldn't make any sense to do it on your own. And I want to actually mention this here. I think a lot of times when we're seeing investing and we look at these like robo-investing options, I mean, I think it's a lot easier to criticize them at this point with like what just went down here in the United States with Robinhood, right? And all the different stocks that sort of had a surge and couldn't be bought, such as GameStop. The problem with it is we see it as somewhat like TurboTax. And what I mean by that is we do our taxes on our own. We don't need the tax man anymore, or woman, to do our taxes. And I think we treat investing the same, but they're very different. Investing is a long-term play. It's not something that you can just simply create a portfolio based on, I mean, I guess you could if you really did the research, but I'll just put it like this. The person I know who invests the best that he does on his own has a background in finance. What I'm trying to say is the reason that he is so successful is because he studies this stuff religiously. And that's really the only way that you're going to do well investing, in my opinion, is you really have to devote yourself to it. You can't just pick stocks based on a trend. So that to be said, I sort of just want to wrap up this segment and say, the reason that you should care about it, the reason that you should invest in the first place, obviously, is to create wealth for yourself. I shouldn't have to convince you that having money is important. I am one of those people that really don't care too much about money, but I do think that having financial stability, building up a retirement for yourself through investing is definitely something you should consider. I mean, whether it's starting an IRA or it's building it through your company's 401k, however you feel you want to build up that investing long term, I mean, that's really up to you and your financial advisor. And then your short term plays could just be playing something that deal with sort of how risky you want to be with your investments, which I'll get to in a second in the next segment. But anyways, the main purpose of getting into ESG investing, if you are investing in the first place or you want to invest in the beginning, is to align your values with companies that share those same values. So in the next topic, in the next segment, I'm going to be talking about impact investing in 2021 from my perspective. With that said, let's go ahead and get a word from our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Aspiration. If this episode becomes enlightening for you, perhaps you're going to reconsider where you put your money. You've heard me mention Aspiration on previous episodes, but I wanted to tell you why I think they're a great option for you. Well, one, they don't fund fossil fuel projects. Like any bank, they are FDIC insured, but unlike their competitors, Aspiration is a certified B Corp and a part of 1% for the Planet, two of our other podcast sponsors. And something that may be important to you is having a bank that is easy to reach and easy to use. And I'm happy to say that their app is extremely easy to use. It actually has a 4.8 star review on the Apple Store. And I was able to set up my account in minutes, and the support over the phone was fantastic. In fact, one of the reports that we're going to be going through today was provided by a customer support rep at Aspiration. They have no hidden fees, a $55,000 ATM network, and climate-friendly features like up to 10% cashback when you shop at socially conscious businesses, the ability to offset all gas purchases, and even a setting that allows you to round up your spending to plant trees. If you'd like to set up your account today, click the link in the show notes of this episode to get $50 after you spend your first $250 with Aspiration. Now, let's get back into the episode. All right, so let's go ahead and talk about impact investing in 2021 from my perspective. So I had a conversation with my mom about 2 months ago, and we were talking about building up my portfolio because I'm really focusing on my retirement now. Finally, I'm 25, so I guess it's never too late to do so. But what I told her is I want to build up a portfolio of, whether it be a mutual fund or individual stocks, of companies that really align with my goals. And when I told her that, she said, let me do some research. Tell me what matters most to you. And so when we started to look at her, she has some tools that she can use as an advisor, financial advisor. And she was able to sort of show me what an ESG score, like how that breaks down, like the percentages. It is out of 100, as we mentioned. But I sort of got to see, we searched a couple of different companies. And then I showed her one of the portfolio or mutual funds that I was interested in, which I'll get into in a second. And she said, let me do some research, and then we'll have a conversation about this in a little bit. So her initial thoughts was that the industry as a whole weren't really up to par with getting the best results and having the best portfolio manager. So with that said, when you don't have great portfolio managers, meaning that these are people that are inexperienced or they just quite frankly offer worse returns, I mean, that's not a good investment. At the end of the day, you're making an investment. This is not like charity work, or this is not donating to charity. This is you investing in the company, right? So let me talk a little bit about the one that I showed her. It's the Redwood Fund from Aspiration. And you guys know me. Aspiration's actually, as you just heard, the sponsor of the episode. But the Redwood Fund specifically, when I looked at it from a investing standpoint, the portfolio managers, the average tenure was only 3 months long. And a good portfolio manager is there for at least 20 years because they have to build up, according to what my mom was kind of telling me, is they have to sort of build up their experience in that firm before they can become that top dog, the portfolio manager. So when you hear something like 3 months and then you look at the management of the account, and we sort of looked at what are the returns for those accounts, and you can see the red and the green. I mean, they just did not do a great job at managing the portfolio, from dropping ones that weren't getting you great yield, and it just wasn't a great return, you know, looking at that mutual fund. So, you know, when she looked at other options, though, she found a really good mutual fund for me, and we looked at it, and the companies that I was investing in, that I was going to begin to invest in, weren't ones that you might typically think of. Salesforce was the first one that we looked at. And it was a really good portfolio. And what I mean by that is maybe it wasn't considered a ESG specific mutual fund, but when you look at it from the standpoint of just the sheer numbers, it's like the marketing of it wasn't ESG, but it really was it aligned with my values much more than one that sort of like advertised as such. So all that to be said, this is why I think it's so important to work with a financial advisor, because there's going to be times where you're going to, and this is specific to my retirement plan. I wanted something long-term that's going to get me good results. From a short-term perspective, we're going to be transitioning after this, going over to the conversation that I had with Eric. We're going to talk about, you know, playing something that's a little bit more risky. And that's the other thing with a financial advisor that you should really consider, is that they understand your risk factor, like how risky, how volatile you want to be with your portfolio. And I think, at least from my perspective, short-term investing in individual stocks like hydrogen, like Eric did, you can sort of do that more comfortably on your own, but you shouldn't be doing that with your retirement. So all that to be said, I think that in 2021, that, you know, impact investing or ESG investing is in a much better place than it was even 5 years ago. So much so that it actually surprised my mom when she was doing this investing. I mean, when she was doing this research. And so I thought, wow, that's really exciting from the podcast standpoint. I think we're going to have lots of great updates over the next 5 years, 10 years. I see this podcast as being a 10-year play, and we'll see where it goes from there. But overall, I think there's a lot to be optimistic about. There's a lot of companies doing great things that I think we could definitely be doing more research on and trying to align, like I said, our portfolios with those companies. So all that to be said, I think you should look at some of these ESG ratings, the index ratings for the companies that you're investing in, and they may surprise you. You may already be involved in good companies, and you may think that some are more ethical than others. That's not always the case. But yes, in conclusion, I think there's a lot to be optimistic about. I'm very excited to continue to update you, and maybe I'll get more transparent with my mutual funds. I'm not sure how I feel about it. It'd be interesting to hear from you guys if you think that's something. If that's something you'd be interested in, by all means, I'm happy to share who is in my mutual fund. But like I said, there's going to be the list of 50 that we're going to be talking about. With that said, on the other side, we're going to be talking right now. This is going to transition into the newsletter, which I think you should sign up for if you want to get that first newsletter. But we're going to go over the interview that I had with my friend Eric. So thank you again for listening. At the end of that, we are going to head into the outro of the episode. I wanted to take a second to thank you for listening, and I hope that this podcast is eye-opening and helpful for you. I created a weekly newsletter, which you can find in the show notes, to create a curation of articles that I don't have a chance to talk about on the podcast, but I still think that they're going to be great topics for you to know about. These articles will specifically be about climate change and carbon neutrality, just as the podcast is. The newsletter will be written in TLDR form, or too long don't read. That way you can get a gist of what happened in the space, but I will also be linking the articles. That way you can click to see those as well. You will only get one email per week sent out every Friday, and it will contain between 3 to 5 summarized articles. That way you don't feel overwhelmed. This newsletter will be one of the easiest ways for you to stay in the know, so make sure to click in the show notes to sign up for the newsletter. I do want to mention at the top of this interview that the discussion that I had with Eric is just our opinion on the matter and obviously not financial advice, so please do not take it as such. I really hope that you get value from it, and I can't wait for you guys to tell me your opinion at the end of the episode. All right, so for this segment, this is a bonus segment. I'm very excited to have added it. I'm bringing on my friend Eric. As I mentioned, he has experience in investing. By no means is he an expert, but he knew a lot more than I did specifically to investing. So I thought I'd bring him on. Thank you so much for joining, Eric. How are you doing today?
Good, good. Thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
Great. Yeah, awesome. So let me kind of set this up for everybody that's listening. You've specifically been looking at the hydrogen space, which I think is a great topic, so much so that I might be talking about it in the next podcast episode as a whole. But I'd love to hear a little bit about what initially piqued your interest in hydrogen.
So, God, it actually actually goes back a while. Back in the good old days when I was working at Radio Shack in 2009, shows my age a little bit. And, you know, I remember this gentleman who came in and was asking for my help for these parts. I was really curious to what he was trying to build. And he said he has a hydrogen vehicle. And I was kind of like, what is that? And, you know, he's telling me about his Bronco and how he converted his Bronco and made converted it so it runs off of water, off of hydrogen. And it just did not like it. It sounded like it sounded like make believe. I didn't understand. You know, it's just like, yeah. What? Your car's running off water. Sign me up. How do we do that? And I mean, that's a very dangerous process, by the way. If you ever look up online on YouTube, it's pretty bootsy. there's like these home kits you can do, and I don't advise on that, but he was doing it. It was actually really fascinating to see. So I guess that was really the start of when I was interested in it. And, you know, fast forwarding.
Now, I guess from an investment. Yeah. Like how did you begin to initially start looking at it from an investment standpoint? I'm curious.
Well, you know, it was always kind of just a segment I was interested in as far as in a return on investment. Energy is just something that is very dependable. Everybody needs it. It's essential and it's not going anywhere. But to that point, we are moving away from gas, I believe. And, you know, one of the big companies that were making a lot of headway was this company called Plug Power. And now, you know, they're one of the bigger alternative energy producers that are making a lot of headlines. They're making a lot of partnerships. They partner with Amazon, and there's just a lot of people that believe they're going to continue to do better things.
And just so for people that don't know, what exactly do they do with Amazon? Just for context.
So they make the engines for their forklifts. They make they develop and design the hydrogen fuel cells for commercial vehicles. And Amazon, amongst other companies, use them.
Very cool. Awesome. No, and I guess you probably had another point there, but so you talked about Plug, and for those of you guys that don't know, Plug is PLUG. If you guys are looking it up as a stock, do you remember how long ago you had initially heard of Plug?
Maybe 5 years ago.
Got it.
I can tell you it was, you know, around a dollar when I was looking at them. Now they're about 43, 46.
Very cool. And so you started investing, as far as I can remember, you said you invested in them last year, and they seem to have some pretty crazy growth even just last year.
Yeah. I actually invested in them last year. I had actually invested in them before, but last year, you know, they really had made some strides.
Very cool. What's another one, I guess, that you're sort of keeping your eyes on for the future?
Yeah, so there's Fuel Cell. They're an interesting competitor, but then there's also Sun Hydrogen. What I found really interesting about them is they're out here in California, out here in Santa Barbara, and a big part of hydrogen's production process is still dependent on or in part dependent on natural gas. So you're still, there's still a carbon footprint associated with it. But there are a few companies right now that have been able to use the process and power it through solar. So the beginning of the production doesn't start with a fuel. It starts with solar power or wind power. There's not too many companies that I know of that do it, but this company called Sun Hydrogen seems to be very interesting. And I mean, they're all very risky. You know, they could come and go in an instant, but it's very fascinating. I think as hydrogen evolves and becomes more, the production becomes more efficient, and the demand for more, for the demand for eliminating pollution and any kind of carbon footprint, that will be the next thing that really is pushed up.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I know we've talked a little bit about it, but we've seen the use case of it used in cars nowadays. And I'm sure that excited you when you saw that. It sort of validated what you were seeing.
Yeah, definitely. And even jets, you know, the aircraft. I know that they made a hydrogen jet. I don't know too much about it, but this company called Zero Avia. I don't even know if they're publicly traded. They might be private. But you know, companies like that are in that space, and it's really interesting to see where that could go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm curious, you know, for those of you that don't know, Eric and I could probably talk for hours, and he's going to continue to come on, but to just sort of sprinkle a teaser of to other topics that interest you outside of hydrogen, what else are you, and even outside of investing, what else is sort of piquing your eyes when it comes?
I mean, I'm totally into automotive, like that, just an enthusiast. I guess it's, you know, like GM's doing some incredible has some incredible initiatives. You could see how the impact of hydrogen and the demand for it is pushing legacy companies like Ford and GM into making commitments to exclusively make electric vehicles. And end the production of, you know, cars as we typically know it, in diesel and gas. So that's extremely interesting to me. But other things could be, you know, the Texas blackout with the grid out there. I was sent an article on hydrogen and how this company called Lavo is one of the first home hydrogen batteries that could power a house for 3 days. It's recyclable and it's not a fire risk, apparently. So I mean, I think hydrogen is really that next step that we're going to take even away from batteries. You know, batteries still leave a carbon footprint. They're lithium ion. They could only take us so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everything you're talking about right now is getting me excited for next week's episode. I think I've confirmed we're going to be talking about hydrogen. And so I'm going to call you out right here. If you have great articles for the research, I'd love to get my hands on it. This is exciting. This is great. Any other final thoughts you want to leave in this episode, specifically with ESG investing?
Stay tuned for the next one.
There you go. I love it. Yep. Teasing it. Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time, Eric. This has been very insightful, even for myself, we've talked a little bit about this and I've learned new things today. So I really appreciate you for taking the time.
Of course. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you next time.
All right.
Would you like to be featured on an upcoming podcast, or would you like to dictate the topic of an upcoming episode? Send in a recording on our podcast's website. The link to the website will be in the show notes. If you have a minute, pause this episode, click the link, and begin recording. I see you all joining me from California, Texas, Ohio, Virginia, Illinois, the UK, Mexico, and Indonesia, just to name a few. It's awesome to see, but I want to get to know you all, and I want to hear from you. Feel free to ask a question, introduce yourself, and share a topic that you'd like me to discuss in an upcoming episode. And remember, your 5-star review of the podcast on any platform that you listen to will plant a tree. Now, let's get back into the episode. I really hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast today. I hope that you guys liked the interview. It was nice to talk to somebody for the first time. I'm getting more and more comfortable with the format of recording. I actually record in my closet, which makes it even a little bit more odd to just be sitting in a closet, but I find that it creates great acoustics. Anyways, let's get to the whole point. I thought that this episode, for me, researching-wise, was very educational, and I hope that you get the same benefit from it. That said, the episode challenge is a resource for you guys. I want you guys to sign up for the Green Biz webinar on March 18th, which is titled ESG in 2021, The State of Play, where you're going to learn about the key ESG metrics investors look at, learn about what opportunities sustainable professionals can play in a leadership role in their company's ESG strategy, how the Biden administration will affect the trajectory of ESG transparency and disclosure, and what are the rising ESG issues that investors are considering assessing within companies. And it's led by Joel Makower, chairman and executive editor of GreenBiz, who will be moderating this session. And the main speakers are Thomas Kamai, Executive Director Investment Management at Morgan Stanley, and Tessie Pedian, Head of ESG Engagement at Amazon. So this is going to be a really, really informative webinar. It's about an hour long. It's free to sign up. I'm going to have the link in the show notes. So please do check this webinar out. I think it's going to be really beneficial, and it will continue to help you to learn about this. So I'm going to continue to try to find great resources that can be the challenge for the episode. Make sure, as I always say, make sure to subscribe for the future content. Next week, I haven't picked the topic, so we are going to get into that. It may be hydrogen. I think that would be really interesting, but I'm not 100% settled towards that. I will be taking the week after off because I will be out of town. So I just want to let you guys know that early. But thank you again so much for listening, and I will talk to you guys on the next episode.